Welcome to the Anti-Woke Podcast. Let's go. Being anti-woke makes me adjacent. Adjacent to the manosphere and adjacent to libertarianism. I mean, I'm not those things, but people I listen to maybe are or at least talk about it. Now, I'll say that I'm a 2010 liberal, but I think I'm going to endorse Donald Trump as soon as we find out he didn't pick neocon Nikki as his vice president. So there's nuance being lost in 2010 liberal. Maybe I'm a 2016 Bernie bro, back when he wanted to close the border. But I feel like if I looked into democratic socialists too much, I'd probably find out I ain't one of them too. But enough about me, let's talk about me. No, let's talk about the manosphere. I don't know much about it. I think Andrew Tate is like the big dog in that. It's like about improving yourself and having traditional relationships with women, maybe. I think the non-binaries have not taken over the manosphere just yet. But I was listening to a podcast, and they were talking about there's alpha males, you probably heard of that, and beta males, you probably heard of that. There's also sigma males. And I don't know what that is, but basically, they're starting to use all the letters in the Greek alphabet in the manosphere. In this podcast, they ask the question, what is the manosphere getting wrong, and what is the manosphere getting right? And they said what they're getting wrong is the idea that all women are looking to marry a man and then for the money, and then cheat on him with some man that looks good. And there are some evolutionary reasons why you'd want to do that. But anyways, they say that ain't true. I'm not taking a position. And then what they say is good about the manosphere is, you know, if you get physically fit, then it's good for you, it's good for your relationships, it's good for your health, it's good for everything. And I'm sure that's true. Although it makes me think of my stereotype of a doctor who, you know, you wait an hour, you go into the exam room, wait another half hour, the doctor comes in for 1 minute, goes, quit smoking, quit drinking, and lose weight. And then he walks out the room making that hand-washing motion going, solved another tough one. I can do that. So, okay, dear listener, lose some weight. Get fit. There you go. I'm just as good as that doctor and the manosphere people. But the podcast I heard that on was the Aporia podcast. A-P-O-R-I-A. And so if you're looking for a podcast that says stuff you're not supposed to say, that's the one. Aporia. And unfortunately, they only give you the first 10 minutes of their longer, whatever, paywall version. And then libertarianism, I feel like there's got to be more to it. Like a lot of smart people are libertarians, people I listen to, or, you know, they're on the shows of people I listen to or something. And I feel like I'm missing something that they should be right. I should be a libertarian. Like I believe in free speech and personal responsibility. And lately I hate the government, but I don't find myself being a libertarian. I don't know if I'm just missing something. I'm like the front half of a duck attached to the back half of a French bulldog. The great replacement theory is correct in South Korea, except they're not replacing them. So the TLDR Global News podcast is talking about the new numbers of birth rates in South Korea. And there was like 21,000 kids born in January. I think South Korea's population is maybe 45 million. Anyways, it leads to a fertility rate of 0.68. So you need 2.1 to replace people. Basically, each woman needs to have a kid to replace her, to replace the father, and then an extra 0.1 because people die. Well, actually, people are not dying enough. Kids die. And so 0.68 in South Korea means that if you keep that up for a few generations, there'll be no one left. And according to this podcast, the reason why the birth rate is so low is two reasons. Housing is too expensive, and the divide of women being on the left and men being on the right is too great. Now, we'll see what happens with South Korea. They don't allow immigrants. So I think the reason why their housing is so expensive is they only have one city, Seoul, and it's crazy expensive, and everyone in South Korea only wants to live in that one city. And in America, housing is expensive because we keep letting migrants move here, which supply and demand, more people need a house prices go up. And so if what this podcast is saying is true, migrants move here, house prices go up, the fertility rate of Americans go down because they can't afford a house, that will replace us. Basically, Central American countries will be the baby-making factories for America. Maybe if we paid them for each baby, then they would have an actual economy with something that they produce that the world wants to buy, and then the people wouldn't want to leave there, and then it would solve the whole problem. And then women going left, men going right. Now that's happening more in South Korea than America, but it is definitely happening in America, and we think that's smartphone social media, so that's not going anywhere. But Elon Musk is always talking about, we need to have more babies, you know, the human race is going to go out of existence. I was listening to the podcast of the Lotus Eaters. I think they were talking about Britain, but, you know, throughout modern civilization, hundreds of years, IQ has been going up and up because society just is more advanced, which leads to more advanced thinking amongst the people, which leads to higher IQ scores on the test. Until recently, when in the West, IQ scores are actually going down because the only people who are replacing, having enough kids to replace themselves, are people with IQ under 85. The Accidental Tax Cutter in Chief. That's the name of the Wednesday episode of The Daily podcast from the New York Times. And it's basically, how can we say this without just coming out and saying this? How can we say this without getting Donald Trump elected? But basically, Joe Biden has cut taxes on the rich like holy crap. I mean, I've been saying that he's giving money to the rich for quite a while now. But anyways, if the New York Times says it, then it's true. And unfortunately, they mix it in with so much other crap that I think if you're woke and you listen to them, I don't know. You know, you'll come away going, oh, I don't know. I don't know what that meant. Because if they made it easy to understand, people would be like, oh, that means I'm voting for Trump. I'm a dyed-in-the-blue, bleeding-heart liberal, and I guess I have to vote for Trump because this guy is the corporate tax cut screw over the weak to help the powerful MF-er. So they mentioned he's done $600 billion worth of tax cuts so far. And what they don't do is compare it to anything else, you know, in particular Trump. So I went and read some stuff, Wikipedia. Boy, it's hard to find the numbers. But let's go through the taxes. So Trump did a corporate tax cut. It's got implemented in 2018. So basically his second 2 years, there was a corporate tax cut. And it looked like it was about $100 billion each, maybe $150 billion each year. So let's say Trump cut taxes by $300 billion. Well, then that's half as much as Joe Biden at $600 billion. And then the New York Times is like, well, you know, some of Biden's tax cuts went to the poor and the working class, apart from the COVID stimulus. But in fact, that COVID stimulus stuff, those tax cuts happened under Trump. I mean, for the working class, let's say. Trump did that for the working class. And then the part that Biden did for the working class, that was just the thing that Trump had done. And then, you know, Trump did it like the last thing he did before he left. And then Biden is basically taking credit for it. Like Trump had the second stimulus ready to go. I think it was ready to go like, you know, a month before the election or something. Basically, Trump is like, let's do this thing, give out a bunch of checks to everyone, you know, $1,200 checks, and then they'll vote for me. And then Nancy Pelosi was like, we're not passing that until, you know, the day after the election. And then that's what they did. So like, oh, that's Biden's thing. No, that was Trump's thing that they just waited until after the election because they didn't want to help Trump. Anyways, every bit of tax cuts that's good that the New York Times attributes to Biden, that's all Trump. And really, it's Steve Mnuchin, the Treasury Secretary under Trump. I think, you know, almost everyone in the Trump administration was a deep state plant who was evil as hell, except for Steve Mnuchin. And like Slate Money, which is a woke podcast, they will go on and on about how awesome Steve Mnuchin is. I mean, that's whatever. That's how I learned that they're not all deep state plants. When the woke people are praising you, you got to double check what's going on. Well, anyways, the question is, are other people in the world going to listen to the New York Times and slog through the bullshit and read between the lines a little bit and make it known that Joe Biden is just a give-to-the-rich MF-er? I don't think they will, but yeah, it's just another log on the fire. So Transgender Day of Visibility fell on Easter Sunday this year. That was pretty funny. Like, I saw somewhere that it was Transgender Day of Visibility, and so I just went on Facebook and said, Happy Transgender Day of Visibility, as a joke, and I was totally unaware that there was a bunch of hoopla around it. I mean, I used to love Easter egg hunting when I was a kid, but anyways, I had forgotten that it was Easter. And Commentary Magazine on Monday talked about it. They're saying, for instance, St. Patrick's Day is on whatever day it's on for 100 years, but they moved it one day this year because it conflicted with something. And Easter Sunday changes each year, so, you know, it should be the one that moves. Transgender Day of Visibility has been on, whatever, March 31st, since Charlemagne decreed it in 834, and it cannot be moved. Another reason why it can't be moved is there's so many other gay holidays, and, you know, Pride Month is coming up. Anyways, their calendar is very, very busy. You can't move it around. There's no room. Basically, the other 364 days of the year already have some other gay thing, and you can't have two, or, you know, you can't have more than seven. Sometimes you have seven of them, but anyways, you can't have eight on a certain day. I mean, must I add it, you bigot. Eight on a day, you bigot. And so the internet and mainstream media is blowing up on this all day long. And towards the end of the day, Biden goes out and says, Transgender people, I see you. I mean, normally Trump is the stand-up routine, but that is pretty funny. And then I think Biden was asked about it and he was like, what's that? Or never heard of it? Or no, it's not. I mean, the hits just keep on coming. I mean, there's probably some intern who's like, I want to join the culture war. And more seriously, it's like, black people, are you watching this shit? This is the guy you'd walk over burning coals to vote for? 200,000 Arabs in swing state Michigan? You noticing this? Probably not, you bigot. The Anti-Woke podcast host just wants to say, Transgender person, I see you. I see you, 6'4", beard that would make Odin proud, red high heels and matching crotchless ball gown. I couldn't see you, but now I can see you. And apparently this holiday has been around since the year Avatar, the movie, came out, 2009. And I see you is the love line from that movie. Coincidence? Just when you thought transgender people couldn't be more in front of you, more you can't look away, you have to see them 24/7, they get a holiday of visibility. You know who I can't see anymore? Normal gay people. You're gonna have to part that beard like the Red Sea to find them. And one of the commentary guys mentions that 2 or 3 years ago, there was a trans holiday at the White House, and they invited a bunch of influencers, including a trans woman with a penis called Rose Montoya, and she took her top off. She was like, can you see me now? And then Biden, or the White House intern, they said, so I see you. And they also said, you're made in the image of God. Man, they hate Christians. Oh yeah, and Ramadan just started. Woke kindergarten. Haven't had one of these in a while. So I'm getting this from the March 2nd episode of Blocked and Reported podcast. But some black lady was a kindergarten teacher, and then she switched over to making kindergarten YouTube videos, which started getting more and more political, and she created a curriculum called Woke Kindergarten that she will sell to school districts. And some kindergarten through maybe fifth grade school in Northern California paid $250,000 for this curriculum. Like, one part was sounds you might hear at a protest. Singing, crying, laughing, I think some crazier stuff, shouting. And then there was a drawing of a kid who had just been tear gassed, BIPOC, and his kid is washing their eyes out with milk. And another part has a cartoon kid paragliding with a Palestinian flag. And I think it mentions from the river to the sea. You don't hear this debate too much anymore, but it's like, from the river to the sea, that means kill all the Jews. No, it doesn't. That means, you know, equal rights for the Palestinians. But I think we did decide that, you know, paragliders, that's just a picture of the people who went and raped and murdered Jews. Anyways, ultimately, this black lady went on YouTube and said some stuff about Israel not having a right to exist. And I don't know if she exactly said she wanted them all raped and murdered, but she does. I think, you know, if you take wokeness, if you're a black woman and you just take wokeness all the way, then rape and murder those Jews. So the school district decided to cut ties with all that. And they would have gotten away with it, too, if it wasn't for you meddling kids. But the word got out. I think some gay white man kindergarten teacher was the whistleblower. And apparently the San Francisco Chronicle has been getting less woke. So they wrote an article. The same podcast goes into pretty good detail on how the New York Times has also gotten less woke lately. And there was another story out of California maybe a year and a half ago where they had some curriculum that had critical race theory, like those words at the top. Because there was a time where people were like, they're not teaching critical race theory in schools. And it's like, if you couldn't find the exact words critical race theory, they'd be like, see, you know, if you found critical theory race or whatever, see, TR, if you found it anything other than CRT, critical race theory, specifically those words in that order, then people are like, they're not teaching it. But there was one school in California that was nice enough to just put that exact thing at the top. Anyways, apparently they're still doing it. I mean, you know, most of these schools, I think, do get away with it. So it's your kid right now. They're being brainwashed, but to a lesser extent. But in that other case and this one, it's Hispanic kids. I think if you just randomly grab a school in California, most likely kids are going to be Hispanic. And if you grab real young ones, they're going to be from a home that speaks Spanish, you know, ESL, English second language. So it's funny how these schools spend all this time trying to teach kids that are just trying to learn English, you know, how to dismantle whiteness. And this woke kindergarten school, there was a conservative Hispanic guy on the school board. And so he would go to the meetings and be like, you shouldn't be doing this woke kindergarten stuff. And they're like, you're out of order. They silenced him. But anyways, here's a clip of the guy.
You guys are screwing with the Latino community. And what's going to happen is this. I'm just going to let them know more and more. Because you guys allow this program in here so they could, and you let them loose on some Spanish-speaking kids, on Latinos, because you don't care. And you talk about racism. You guys are the racist. The program tells you it's to disrupt whiteness. The people who you hired, they don't like white people. They don't like white teachers, white parents, white children. It's not what I'm saying. It's in the literature. It's right here. Go look it up yourself. You hired a bunch of racist socialists. And why did you do this? I don't know. And the scores went down.
And so I think calling out racism against whites, it's gaining a little traction. Not a lot, but before it was just, you know, if you said that, you were a Nazi. Now people are like, you know, just be quiet. We don't want to talk about that. Well, in fact, here's someone else involved in the situation who's woke. This is how they feel about that kind of talk.
I am not safe in that space. So I'm kind of on the same boat with the district staff. They aren't safe. Nobody in that room is safe, and I don't feel safe because at this, where we are right now, it's kind of like a ticking time bomb. We don't know what's going to happen. We don't know what's going to be said. And me personally, I would hate to be the next victim of whatever is going to be said.
And so there's 60 kids in each grade, and less than 20% of them are passing any of the qualifications, reading, writing. Apparently, the school has seven Asians who are doing phenomenally. Just every stereotype, every time. True, that's because that's a stereotype about stereotypes. But the San Francisco Chronicle interviewed a bilingual teacher at the school. And I think basically, fighting whiteness, well, certainly didn't make the test scores go up. The test scores actually went down a tiny bit. Basically, it had no effect. Like, you might think it wasting a bunch of time would make the kids dumber, but apparently, wasting time is fine. But they interviewed this teacher, and the teacher was like, focusing on academics is not working. There's no magic bullet to raise test scores. So basically, we got some kids, they ain't gonna learn nothing. May as well indoctrinate them. I don't think they're thinking about the long game, but maybe in 5 years you can have the girls turn into boys, and in 10 years they will tell their Catholic parents that they're never speaking to them again. And in 15 years they'll go back to being a girl and have a kid. And in 20 years they can all have a good cry about it. And apparently now every high school in California must have an ethnic studies class. I don't know if every student must take it or not, but I guess you at least must offer it, and probably you must take it if you're white. But it's like when my woke buddy says about Trump, he's an authoritarian, which reads as poo-poo head. Fascist means doo-doo face. These are just magic words where you think you've said something and you don't have to do any more thinking. You don't have to prove anything, no data required, only a racist would bring up data. But if someone says you're being racist against white people, if you haven't been indoctrinated correctly, you don't know the magic comeback to that. Which in America you say, well, no, racism is power plus privilege. In Australia they call it race-based societal power, which I prefer. So hopefully these kindergartners, when they go back to fight adultness, which is another thing that they were teaching them about, if their parents say that's racist against whites, then they could be like, no, power plus privilege. Mi amigo. The federal government is changing how it officially tallies race and ethnicity. And this is for the 2031 census, but I think it affects some other stuff before then. And the biggest change is they're changing Hispanic from a separate ethnicity category to a race. And so I think they used to ask ethnicity first, like on the 2020 census. So it'd be like, are you Hispanic or non-Hispanic? And Hispanic people would be like, Hispanic. I'm driving a lowrider right now. I claim Serranos at Pelican Bay. And then the next question they'd have to answer was, what's your race? Are you white, black, or Asian? Which you think woke people would be like, that's mestizo erasure. Or call it Amerindian, Native Central American, whatever you want to call it. But they don't care about that. I think they're like, come on, choose black. Lower the per capita black crime stats. I mean, it's hard for me not to see each of these changes and just think how they're going to affect the crime stats. And Biden's woke, basically because he's actually putting a White House intern who just graduated from Harvard Gender Studies in charge of the census, probably. But I don't know. I think they may have done messed up on this one. If you take Hispanics out of the white, whites are going to, I think, look less criminal. And you don't really want to help blacks or anyone else. You just want to hurt whites. That's always the through line. And so they've created a new category of MENA, Middle Eastern North African, which I think they used to be part of whites. I don't know. Maybe those people actually commit less crime and that's why they're pulling them out. Although it's gonna not be good for the terrorism stats. And another category is black or African American. So I think they're like, hey, Nigerian doctors, get in the black category to make those stats look better. Well, and another change is you can pick more than one. And this is all self-reporting. They're not giving you a DNA test. So I don't know what that does. I guess if young people are dumb and think America's racist and they all leave the white category, whites will really look not criminal. Well, what's the woke complaint? They think giving people more options means that it'll be sooner that whites are less than half of America. And they're like, Trump is worse than Hitler. We can't let that, you know, that's going to be a right-wing talking point, you racist. But sometimes it seems like the whole country is going to be Hispanic here soon. And I guess eventually that has to get over the bureaucratic inertia. If the New York Times writes about something, then that thing happened. And they've been writing more about how the COVID lockdowns for schools have messed up our kids. And chronic absenteeism went from 15% before COVID. It went up to 28%. I think it's 26% now. And that means a kid missed more than 18 days in a year. So maybe some kids miss 19 days and they make it all up because they were just sick. I was going to say, but about a quarter of the kids, you can just write them off. But you can't write off the kids, or maybe you can, and we did, but you can write off that year of education probably for a lot of them, because they probably missed a lot more than 18 days, and they probably didn't do their homework when they did go to school. And it seems like media outlets are being pretty scrupulous and not letting any know what the racial breakdown is. I mean, certain stats are good for falsely accusing America of being racist, but I guess other stats ain't. Like graduation rates. I guess sometimes people find that useful and sometimes they hide it. Someone looked up the chronic absentee rate in Detroit. It's 66%, which doesn't exactly tell you what's going on, but I think, you know, just imagine your stereotype. Yep, it's true. I mean, basically, once again, woke people have destroyed black lives like nobody's business. And to a lesser extent, kids in general. We solved climate change. Again. The New York Times' Friday episode of The Daily is talking about an engineering experiment to cool the earth. And I've mentioned that there's something called sulfate aerosols. And if you put those into the upper atmosphere, it'll solve climate change. We can have it done in a year. But we don't want to do that because solving climate change with a snap of the fingers will stress out young climate change activists. So they're doing an experiment in San Francisco with aerosols, and I'm like, is it sulfate aerosols? And they're like, no, it's salt aerosols. And it makes the clouds brighter, reflecting the sunlight into space, cooling the earth. And I guess they're running an experiment right now in Australia to try and cool down the Great Barrier Reef, because the coral is having problems. And I'm halfway through the episode. You know, it's a 30-minute episode. It's driving me up the wall. The New York Times, the people they put on, they're very slow. Maybe it's meant to go to sleep too. In which case, that's actually pretty good. But I think, you know, slow podcasts where they just barely ever give you any information and heaven forbid a number, I think that's for women. There's a lot of podcasts, they'll be like, the narrator will say, meet Sally. She's lived in Detroit her whole life. And they'll put Sally on and she'll be like, my family has been here for generations. We used to live on the west side, but we moved to the east side in 77. And then they'll put in the sounds of footsteps and it'll be like, we're walking over broken concrete to get to the crumbling brick that is the local school. And they'll do like 5 minutes of that stuff. And then they'll say, 2/3 of black kids in Detroit don't go to school. And I'll be like, well, what was the percentage before COVID? And they're like, oh, no. That's a number. That will be the second number. We got to do 5 more minutes of this slow storytelling before we give you the second number. But anyways, this New York Times one, it's slow. In a different way, what they keep going on and on about is the amazing technology, you know, the research and the scientists and the hopes and just whatever. Like, it's so amazingly technically difficult to make these clouds brighter. And I think what they're trying to say is this isn't easy to solve climate change. People on the right who said climate change was bullshit were not right the entire time. We haven't been lying to you and drumming up fear to try and make Democrats win. Basically, no holding anyone accountable when it turns out that climate change was just a psyop like COVID. I'm halfway through. I think I'm going to quit. I haven't gotten to the part where they bring up people of color. I mean, for sure, that's going to be brought in it somehow. The sun explodes and destroys all the planets. Women and people of color are affected most. Well, I was wrong. They didn't say people of color. They said, why do rich countries get to decide what kind of interventions we do when it's the effects of climate change that hit poor countries the most? Woke Disney and pop culture. Disney and pop culture. The movie Civil War comes out in a couple weeks, and there's been sneak peeks of the first 10 minutes. And the story is, there's a civil war in America today, and some journalists are trying to get to Washington, D.C. And it's from the guy who did Ex Machina, which is a great movie. And it seems like the movie's trying to play it down the middle, even though, you know, in the media today, modern civil war means, you know, white people are all racist. But at least based on the first 10 minutes, it sounds like the story of the movie might actually be that the media is lying to you and trying to turn everyone against each other. So that's interesting. And then I guess the president is in his third term, like he wouldn't accept the results of an election maybe. So they probably have to throw in some anti-Trump stuff to, you know, it's the sugar that makes the medicine go down. I experienced the Disney news this week kind of like a Disneyland ride. Not like a roller coaster where you go to the top of the mountain and then go shooting on down the other side. More like the Haunted Mansion. Remember that one where you're in a ride with maybe three other people? I think it's supposed to be like a big leather chair from like a Victorian mansion. Except it fits four people and you can't fall out. And it's on some rickety tracks, and you're going down a hallway, and maybe it turns to the left, and you see a statue whose eyes follow you, and then it jerks you around 180 degrees to the other side of the hallway, and there's some paintings that have ghosts moving in them. So not zooming down a giant mountain, but just getting jerked around by a ride made in the 60s. So let's see if we can make it the same for you. The first thing is that Nelson Peltz failed in his bid to get on the board of directors. Who's that? He was kind of the anti-woke guy. Him and Elon Musk were palling around a couple months ago. But the shareholders voted, and I think he did better than a lot of people would have thought, but they're sticking with the same woke people that have been in charge of Disney for a long time. And so that was, I think, decided on April 3rd, the shareholders meeting. And then they had other stuff that they voted on and kind of questions from different shareholders. Let's play a clip from the first shareholder here.
Good afternoon. The Educational Foundation of America is a long-term investor in Disney stock. We're asking Disney not to just disclose its political contributions, as they have been doing, but to account for them, to demonstrate the company's spending is rational, strategic, and producing a positive return on investment. Disney's odyssey through Florida politics in the last several years demonstrates as to why this kind of reporting is needed. In recent years, Disney contributed over $100,000 to an administration that took aim at Disney's employees, mocked the company's values at a national level, and then punished Disney by diminishing its tax breaks and degree of self-governance.
Oh, listen,
there
to this
are other
crap.
Examples that raise questions about Disney's political spending patterns. Our company has supported politicians working against progress on climate, even as extreme heat days steadily climb in the Orlando area and Paris, and fires rage in California.
Global warming in Orlando.
Okay. To promote women to leadership positions within the company, but nearly three quarters of Disney's political contributions went to anti-choice politicians in Florida in the five-year run-up to 2022's 15-week abortion ban. Next month, a six-week abortion ban will go into effect in Florida. That is before most women even know they are pregnant. One in four women will have an abortion in her lifetime. Think of the harm to Disney's Florida workforce over the years to come. And finally, Disney has also supported politicians who promote the 2020 stolen election conspiracy theory. With this proposal, we believe it's time for Disney.
So that shareholder, I thought they were taking me off in one direction, and then boom, they took me off exact opposite. Let's see what the next shareholder said.
Your line is open, ma'am.
Good morning. I am Chloe Cole, patient advocate for Do No Harm, a group that seeks accountability in the medical profession. I am presenting proposal number 7 titled Report on Gender Transitioning Compensation and Benefits, sponsored by National Legal and Policy Center. Disney pays for gender transition interventions, but not detransitioning care. Therefore, the company discriminates based on gender identity under EEOC regulations. I speak from personal experience as someone who was deceived and physically harmed at a young age by gender ideology, validated by the medical industry and pushed to the masses by corporations like Disney. Influenced by modern media and social networks, I began a transition to male at age 12. Ooh. By age 16, after practitioners I trusted encouraged me to take puberty blockers and get a double mastectomy, I tried to come back to reality, but it was too late.
Reality.
My body has been irreversibly damaged, and years later, my chest is still in bandages. My doctors have abandoned me. You doctors look and shrug. As a result, I am suing those professionals who steered me into taking these destructive steps that have permanently scarred me. But Disney, in its arrogance, has responded to our proposal by stating that I am only trying to generate attention for a limited agenda.
Oh.
Mr. Iger, Disney, under your watch, is pushing the limited agenda of gender ideology. Disney has become the Ursula that is stealing the voices of thousands of little Ariels across the world by telling us that we can be something that we can never become. The lawsuits are coming, sir.
Okay, that one was more how I thought it was going to be. The last time Disney did this, I guess 3 months ago, most of the questions were like that, or statements. And there was another anti-woke one after that, but you get the idea. But basically, money talks and bullshit walks. So I guess I haven't done this in a while. I went and checked the Disney stock price. It's up 50% in the last 6 months. Like basically huge, hugely up. It's gone from like $80 a share to $120 a share. And I think net revenue from the last 3 quarters, you know, basically profit, was like negative $1 billion. And then up $400 million. And then most recently up $2 billion. So they're making money and therefore the stock price is way up. And so I think Nelson Peltz was kind of concocting his plan to take over the board of directors before this giant run-up in the stock price. And basically, that's what did him in. It wasn't a choice of woke or anti-woke. And, you know, what has Disney been doing in the last 6 months? They released a couple woke movies that flopped enormously, but those were things that had been in the pipeline for years. So what they've actually been doing in the last 6 months is they've just laid off many thousands of workers, and they stopped making movies and TV shows. I mean, they stopped making woke ones because they stopped making them in general. And that's kind of a kick in the balls. Like, we wanted them to stay super woke and just go down in just a flazing blame of glory of wokeness. But instead, they've just been kind of changing, slowly dialing it back and not losing. Disney not losing is anti-woke winning, I guess. All right, I got the stat. So Nelson Peltz received 30% of the vote, and he lost because the big index funds voted against him, BlackRock, Vanguard, etc., aka your 401k. So Disney and wokeness won. I mean, who won was the powerful people. But I think this whole thing has really put them through hell. Other Fortune 500 CEOs don't want anything to do with all this that happened, even if, you know, you keep your job in the end. And I think all this started when BlackRock really got into ESG and enforcing all the Fortune 500 companies, you know, that they own 5 to 15% of, to get woke. So it really depends on how they take it. I mean, you know, you could be the CEO of General Electric or something. You know, BlackRock will just throw you in the trash, put someone else in new. So they do that if you're not woke enough, or maybe they start doing it if you're actually losing money because you're too woke. And I think you can buy stock in BlackRock. So maybe BlackRock owns itself. Basically, we need a shareholder revolt at the big index funds. The critical drinker and nerd Roddick were on the Piers Morgan show, and they were talking about woke Hollywood and Disney. And the three of them kind of represent the death of the media, and then also the media coming back. Like Piers Morgan, I think he used to be woke, and then he was the host of Good Morning Britain or something. And he said that Meghan Markle, Prince Harry's wife, was a liar. And he got fired. And now, I think basically he's on YouTube. And his show, it looks like a real, you know, mainstream show with a news desk and all that stuff. But I imagine he's just, you know, doing it out of his basement or something. I mean, he has, I think he's a lot richer than normal YouTubers. So, you know, maybe he has a separate building. But it looks like he just does Zoom calls with guests that he interviews, which, you know, at that point, I mean, that's pretty damn similar to just being a YouTuber. And the critical drinker, he's like the Scottish guy with an amazing accent who shits all over Disney. And I think his story is he's like a real author with real published books, but then he got drunk one time and went on YouTube and complained about some movie. And then he just blew up. And I think now his videos get like, you know, a million views, which puts him on par with, you know, almost Fox News or, you know, maybe more than MSNBC. And then he only talks pop culture. He doesn't talk news. Not yet. A lot of these guys I see is eventually they're like, they get fed up with something in politics and they start talking politics. I don't know what's going on in Scotland, if he was a Brexiteer or not. I don't know if he has a bunch of employees, but he could afford them if he wanted them. He probably does have them. And then Nerd Roddick, he's an American guy who shits all over Disney. And I don't know how many workers he has. He has a number of workers. And he has a thing called Friday Night Tights, which is a panel discussion of woke Hollywood every Friday night. And one of the people on the panel is Quarter Black Garrett, who used to work for Steven Crowder. And he's Nerd Roddick's producer, so basically he's on there as a producer and a chime in. And then he has another producer on there who, you know, she speaks at the beginning of the show, and then the joke was she never says anything again, but her name is X-Ray Girl. He introduces her as X-Ray, a girl, because she's Chinese descent and hot. But so Sports Illustrated and Vice Media and, you know, a lot of media companies have gone out of business or are about to really go out of business. And so they're not just being replaced by YouTubers. They're being replaced by YouTubers who have employees. I mean, the first thing you want to get is a video editor, because editing takes forever and is not fun. Well, I'm going to have a point to all this. But years ago, I did a podcast where I talked about the critical drinker. And so I put the critical drinker in the title of that podcast episode. And it just, you know, it gets like 500 more listens than any other podcast around that era. So I wanted to try that again. And so there you go. I didn't say much about the guy, but I'm going to put him first in the title. And so here's a clip of the beginning of that show. It really is meaningless, but I bothered to make it. So here you go. You know, the Scottish brogue, that's the critical drinker. Unfortunately, he's only a small part of the clip.
Department.
People want to go see diverse films.
No, they
also
don't.
Want to see things.
We used to joke about they're just checking boxes when they're literally checking boxes.
And they've stopped thinking about storytelling because they actually look down on the audience.
The woke brigade that's within their building.
They've got nowhere to go at this point.
They're just there for identity politics.
The House of Mouse is falling down. Disney's last four big releases have bombed at the box office. The company is currently no longer Hollywood's number one film studio. Recent box office takings show even Marvel.
So, Candace Owens versus Ben Shapiro, Christians versus Jews, America versus Israel, Christ is King versus You're Fired. That saga is continuing. And if you want to know a ton about it, Lauren Chen, smoking hot anti-woke YouTuber. She's got some videos. Mark Dice does not pull the punches at all. He's covered it quite a bit. Again, YouTube. But TLDR, Candace Owens said something about Israel that Ben Shapiro didn't like. They got in a fight. She said Christ is King. He's like, that's anti-Semitic, you're fired from the Daily Wire, or something like that. And then maybe they're going to have a debate this week coming up. But I think one thing that they will not be debating is the Daily Wire, which says it supports free speech, firing her for her speech. And at least from the people I've seen, they're on the side of Candace Owens. I mean, even removed from the facts of the case, Ben Shapiro is just not that likable. It's kind of like Hillary Clinton. And it seems like it's exposing or maybe creating a rift between anti-woke Christians and the Daily Wire. And it's not like Christians are super fond of Muslims, but I mean, at least part of it is, you know, why should we be sending billions of dollars of weapons to Israel every year? America first. And I think Candace went farther than that, but I don't really know. But there's two things about it that I'm watching. So first off, the Daily Wire, you know, it's kind of like Nerdrotic. You know, Daily Wire 10 years ago maybe has the same amount of employees as Nerdrotic has now. And just, you're too successful, you get too big, you become too large of an organization, you're incorporated, and all of a sudden there's someone up higher who's censoring someone down lower's free speech. And I think that's just inevitable with bureaucracy, and you need bureaucracy whenever you have an organization with many employees. You know, you're going to hire someone named John, and then he's not going to keep his hands off of Sally, and now you're going to have to hire someone to do HR. But the internet is a real meritocracy without DEI, and maybe Candace Owens will start her own company, and then that will replace the Daily Wire as Christians switch. I mean, probably not, but that's kind of how it goes. Maybe you get too big, you go away. I'm not sure. I mean, AI is always in the background of anything when you're like, oh, years from now, that's how something's going to be. But the other thing is it reminds me of, I don't know, maybe 2-3 months ago when basically pro-Israel Jews got the president of Harvard fired and the president of Penn and I think some other people. And basically Israel Gaza has shown a huge rift in the left. Like, you know, young Democrats do not like what Joe Biden's doing. They're afraid it's going to cost him the election. And anti-woke people and people on the right were just kind of sitting back going, oh, well, thank God we don't have that problem. Thank God that war is not tearing us apart. And Christians are like, Christ is king. Patrick Bet David and his valuetainment YouTube empire hired Chris Cuomo, formerly of CNN, to be an occasional commentator. And Cuomo got on there and he knew exactly who Ben Shapiro was. He was like, Ben Shapiro's not good looking and his voice doesn't have any gravitas. And then also this week, Jesse Waters, who is the guy who took over Tucker Carlson's spot on Fox News, was on Valuetainment, the PBD podcast, or I don't know what all this stuff is, other than, you know, big dogs from cable news are appearing on this stuff. And basically, they're criticizing the Israeli Wire. And I'm wondering if they think they can be the up-and-coming alternative media conservative, you know, thing instead of the Daily Wire. I mean, I barely heard of these people. Might be the same with you. Doesn't matter. Just keep those names in mind and maybe, you know, in the next year we'll see that they blow up or something. I had some interactions on Spotify this week. The question was, what's pissing you off this week? And Blackout King said, immigration. Thanks for the comment, Blackout King. I hear you. And I also did a poll. It was Christ is King? Question mark. And two people voted yes, and one person voted no. So thanks, everyone, and please tell someone about this podcast. Rami Youssef hosted Saturday Night Live recently. Who's that? Some guy who's Muslim, so Hulu gave him a TV show, Netflix gave him a comedy special, and then SNL let him host. I saw some headline, some right-winger was complaining about the monologue, so I went to check it out. It was fine. I mean, it wasn't, right-wingers everywhere were outraged. If you're a good anti-woker, you need to be outraged. It was it was not much. Basically, someone was able to get a little bit of outrage out of it. I was hoping to get some too, but I couldn't. But SNL has not been 110% woke every time anymore, so I kind of just like to check in. And, you know, he said some stuff about how he hates Trump, but he, you know, made some jokes at Biden's expense too. Let's compare and contrast. Here was some of his Trump joke.
And people don't get us, and there's all this division, but it's not where you think it is, right? So I live in New York, we're in this bubble. And we think like everything we disagree with is in the South, but I don't believe in the South. There is no South. Like, the South is 45 minutes away from wherever you are. I had a show in upstate New York. I was walking through the neighborhood. There's all this Trump stuff, flags, red hats. I was like, yo, I went north, but I'm South.
So Trump's racist. Never heard that one before. Here's some of what he said about Biden.
Joe looks good when he's aware. You've seen him, right? Like when he's really, you know those days when he just comes out and he's just like thawed? Like they give him an extra 10 in the microwave. He's just lit up.
Basically, Biden's old, which is not something you could always joke about. I mean, I don't watch Saturday Night Live, so I don't know why I think this, but I think calling Biden old has only become okay on SNL maybe, you know, a few months ago. I don't think that was allowed last season. And it's kind of like, you know, mainstream media is 100% Trump's racist. So if you go and do 80% Trump's racist, 20% Biden's older than dirt, like, oh my God, that's a huge change. That's a huge change against Biden. You can't say that. And most of his monologue was somehow related to Islam. I mean, he's a Muslim, but sounds like he smokes weed too, so he's not your throw the gays off the roof kind of Muslim. He said he didn't like Trump or Biden for president. He wanted a woman. No, even better, a trans woman. She could have a bumper sticker showing a before and after picture of her and say, this is what I'm going to do to America. But he said something about Arabs. He didn't say he was an Arab, but it was kind of like, I was like, are you an Arab? He doesn't look like an Arab. He looks like he's half white, and then the other half is something that isn't too far off from white. Oh, colorism. But I looked it up. He's Egyptian. So it made me look up the DNA admixture for Egyptians. This is not exactly right, but it was something like one-third Arab, one-third white, one-third North African, and then a little bit of black. But it sounds like the black part that is in Egyptians is only in part of Egypt, and it's probably not the part that his family comes from. I wouldn't be surprised if they're racist against blacks in Egypt, unlike America. I know the country doesn't like it when people say that Cleopatra is black. Politics and Donald J. Trump. Politics and Trump. I'm the anti-woke. Some Joe wanted to. It's anti-woke podcast time. I was listening to the Slate Money podcast, which is a mainstream media podcast, and someone bought an ad saying that the mainstream media is trying to create hatred in America and they're truly sick people. Here's the clip.
The mainstream media is doing everything within their power to foment hatred and anarchy. They are fake news and truly bad people with a sick agenda.
So, stuff's happening. We'll see. But the Slate Money podcast, it came out before I published my last podcast, but I didn't listen to it in time. But they had some more interesting facts about Donald Trump's Truth Social SPAC, you know, basically IPO. So first, Trump has to wait 6 months before he can sell his stock. That's dependent on the board of directors, which is like his sons. So he can change that anytime he wants. Then you know, oh, the company doesn't make that much money. It shouldn't be worth $8 billion. It's a bet on whether or not Donald Trump becomes president. If Donald Trump loses, then, you know, maybe the whole thing becomes worthless. I mean, maybe, maybe not. And if he becomes president, maybe something amazing happens and, you know, the sky is the limit. So it'll be interesting to see if the stock price goes up and down as, like, presidential polling comes in. And the people on Slate Money, they do not like Trump. Anyways, they're like, you know, oil sheiks from the Middle East are going to be able to bribe Trump by buying a bunch of stock in Truth Social when he's president. Like, hey Trump, I'm a giant shareholder, let's hang out and discuss my issues. Maybe that means the working poor can finally get a voice if they buy stock. They can bribe the president, since their votes don't seem to count. Let's take some numbers from the Slate Money podcast numbers round. 1,300. That's the number of Ferraris bought in Taiwan last year. The AI chips boom is making a bunch of billionaires over there. And 100 semi-trucks. That's how much energy that ship that hit the bridge and knocked it over recently, that's how much energy it had. The ship was going 10 miles an hour, and it was equivalent to 100 fully loaded semi-trucks going 80 miles an hour. It would be like maybe 15 kilometers an hour and 150 kilometers an hour, or something. Sports. But not too much of it. Sports on T-Wolf Sports. Do you have the balls for Sports on the Anti-Wolf Podcast? This week, the U.S. men's soccer team won a game against Mexico because the Mexican fans were calling them putos. Like, I think they were going to win the game anyways, but the game got cut short a little bit because of the crowd, which sounds like a rule, you know, ripe for false flag events, but now I know what puto means. It's male prostitute in Spanish, but you know who pays male prostitutes to have sex with them? It ain't women. So it's another way to call someone gay. And then college basketball, March Madness has been going on. The men are playing, no one cares. And the women are playing, and for once, people care. And in one of the women's games, the three-point line was drawn on the court wrong. It was 9 inches too close to the basket. And I'm not sure. I think they only figured it out almost at the end of the game, and there was nothing you could do. Too bad, so sad. And then the big deal is Caitlin Clark and Iowa gonna win the national championship. And Caitlin Clark, she's the great white hope. She's gotten America interested in women's basketball, college only. Got me interested too. And I got to admit it, I mean, so she's like the greatest ever. I probably wouldn't be caring about that. She's white. In basketball, white people are the underdogs. Root for the underdog. You know, I mean, like black people in Obama or OJ. And so Caitlin Clark played a couple games this week. The first one was against LSU. So Iowa versus LSU, that's a rematch of the championship from last year when LSU and Angel Reese won. And that was a big racial thing last year because Angel Reese was acting like a person who had no class. And then people are like pointing that out and they're like, well, you're not blaming the white girl. And it's not relive it, but you know, if you go to the tape, you just see that Angel Reese has no class, and then the thing that Caitlin Clark was doing was she was just having fun, you know, in sports. And I guess, I mean, Angel Reese, she's got crazy long eyelashes and crazy long painted nails. And hey, Smokey, what's up with you and that chicken head kind of thing. And she was saying that she loves being the villain. And then the LA Times, one of their sports guys, wrote an article talking about the upcoming game, and he called LSU a bunch of, he said they were the dirty debutantes, and the game was going to be Louisiana hot sauce versus milk and cookies. And milk and cookies, that sounds racial, but I don't think it is. I mean, milk is white colored. I don't know. Anyways, everyone told that LA Times sports guy he was racist, he was sexist, he apologized. I think he was actually trying to compliment them, but anyways, no good deed goes unpunished. I think last year someone said that playing LSU was like getting into a bar fight, which would be a compliment to a men's basketball team, but basically you just got to be careful what you say about women. I think, yeah, just period. And so Caitlin Clark in Iowa beat them, and then they got into the Final Four, and there they beat UConn, which is like the greatest women's basketball team, the only women's basketball team that people have ever heard of. And UConn's best player is Paige Beckers, who's also white. So a little white-on-white violence. And I'm not a sports fan. I don't watch sports. I've been kind of following this women's basketball stuff. I don't think that is because I'm going to be a women's basketball fan going forward. It's just a thing. It's, you know, it's grabbed America's attention. Grabbed mine. And, I mean, I don't know how to prove it, but I feel like America's watching this stuff the same as me. I mean, they're watching it for the race stuff first. They're like, the kind of from the ghetto black girls versus the corn-fed Iowa girl. And then we're all watching it for gender stuff, like UConn after they lost. And they're given, you know, they go up on a table and they all have to answer questions from the press. And they were all crying. There's no crying in basketball. Oh, women's basketball, I guess there is. I mean, it was more the sniffles. Basically, the UConn girls, the top two of them, they're cute. They're hot. Basically, being an attractive woman kind of puts a whole different spin on everything you do, including playing basketball and crying after the game. I don't know if I said, Caitlin Clark in Iowa won that game. UConn lost. And so Caitlin Clark is by far the biggest star. She's a bigger star than I think the entire WNBA put together, maybe all the other women in college basketball put together. 12.5 million people watched her game, which was like broke the record of all time, men's or women's, for ESPN college basketball. If you wanted to buy a ticket to see her, it was $2,300 a ticket, whereas the men's Final Four tickets were $1,000. If only Caitlin Clark was smoking hot, like, she would go down in history as one of the biggest stars the world has ever seen. And so I think next year I'm gonna keep an eye on Paige Beckers, because she's pretty hot. I mean, she's, for women's basketball, she is smoking hot. And she's got one more year. But Caitlin Clark, she's going to the WNBA, and she's probably gonna make $250,000 in WNBA salary, because that's just how much women who play basketball get, max. And then for endorsements, she's probably going to be making $5 million, who knows what, $10 million. I mean, women like to buy clothing, and they maybe like to buy women's basketball clothing. I imagine she's with Nike, but I don't know. And then there's another basketball league that I vaguely was aware of called the Big Three Basketball League, and it was started by Ice Cube, the rapper. And it's 3-on-3, half court, but at stadiums. I mean, that's all I know. I went on YouTube to make sure it was a real thing. Apparently, it's been around 7 years, and yeah, they got whatever. It's a real thing. But anyways, Ice Cube offered Caitlin Clark $5 million to play in the Big Three League. But I think currently WNBA rules say you can't play in two leagues. I think it would, you know, this would be Caitlin Clark playing against men, I guess, so she would just be terrible. I mean, just huge, huge men versus a relatively teeny woman. You know, she's maybe 6 foot. But it would make her a lot more famous to be playing in that league and this other league and against men and who the hell knows what. But also, you don't want to get injured and cut your career short. And well, the Death in Journalism podcast talked about it this week, so I grabbed a couple clips from them. This first one here is Paul Pierce, a mildly famous basketball player turned announcer. And I think, like, you know, like real black basketball players, like, you know, the ones who made $100 million, they're not butthurt about the best female basketball player being white. So I think to them, I mean, they look at it like it's like Little League, you know, it's not something to get worked up over. The U.S. men's soccer team, got called Puto by the Mexican fans when they were playing Mexico. And they were going to win anyways, but I think the referee kind of cut the game short and declared them the winner. So now I know that Puto means male prostitute in Spanish, but who do male prostitutes have sex with? It ain't women. So basically it's like calling someone gay. And then the NCAA March Madness basketball tournament's going on now. And it's men. The men have their brackets and the women also. And this time around, people care about the women more. And so we got to learn that the courts that they run around on are flown by airplane or something in, and they're new every time. They don't use the one that's in the stadium already. And so one of the courts for a women's game, the three-point line was 9 inches too close to the basket. And some people are like, that's showing disrespect to women. But I think these courts are all made in the same factory. It was just a, whatever. It could have happened to anyone.
It's not, it's beyond that, Key. I'm going to tell you. I'm going to just keep it 100 with you. We saw a white girl in Iowa do it to a bunch of black girls.
Mm-hmm. Well, of course.
That made it like, oh, that gave my respect. That gave my respect.
I hear you. You're
like,
right.
That's like, oh, she didn't do this to some other little white girls that was over mm-hmm. here and
yeah.
in Colorado, wherever. She did it to some girls from LSU, you know, who we thought were some dogs.
Defending champs,
and put them on her knee and spanked them.
Spanked them.
And so that, and it's, no. I know, but I didn't expect that.
Now I found Pierce's.
Well, and here's a clip of Angel Reese after her game. You can see if you think she has class or not.
I don't really get to stand up for myself. I mean, I have great teammates. I have a great support system. I got my hometown. I got my family that stands up for me. I don't really get to speak out on things just because I just try to ignore. And I just try to stand strong. Like, I've been through so much. I've seen so much. I've been attacked so many times. Death threats. I've been sexualized. I've been threatened. I've been so many things, and I've stood strong every single time. And
then someone's got to get upset over Caitlin Clark's skin color. And so Jameel Hill filled that role. Again, who's that? But she used to be one of the hosts on SportsCenter, and ESPN, I think, fired her for tweeting too much stuff about Trump. And then she had a podcast on Spotify. This is the only thing I ever heard of her for. And like Joe Rogan got a $100 million contract from Spotify. And she was like, Spotify, I dare you to give $100 million to a black person for their podcast. And she didn't specifically say, for me, my podcast, I'm black, but that was what she meant. Anyways, Spotify fired her or didn't renew her contract or something. Here's what she said. Ooh, that's what she said.
Preconceived notions about how women are supposed to behave, whether it be black women or white women. You know, a lot of the digs that get thrown at Angel Reese is about behavior and policing, how she behaves, and Flaw J. Johnson. They're not supposed to be this brash. They're not supposed to be this bold. They're not supposed to get on the court and talk their shit. Like, they're not supposed to do these things because this is not how we have idealize what women in a competitive sport, what that looks like. The criticism is often very one-sided. Caitlin Clark talks her shit. Caitlin Clark is demonstrative. People aren't bothered by it because they're caught up in the narrative of, oh, here's this, you know, wonderful, kind soul from the great state of Iowa representing middle America. So they put all these sort of, what happens in these sports race wars is everybody projects their own shit on the people coming and the people who are actually involved in the competitiveness of it, who have nothing to do with any of this narrative.
Well, let's get real. I have spent a lot of time and mental energy comparing the attractiveness of various women's college basketball players. Like, while they're playing the game, the camera's far off, so you can't quite tell if they're hot. So then you got to go on the internet and try and find better pictures. And then you're like, oh, they don't wear makeup while they're in their uniform, so let's find their Instagram account and see them when they're, you know, wearing a dress, going out on a date. And so I don't know if this is like what lifelong fans are built on. And then, to be blunt, I think college girls, right, that's like a porn search term. So, am I going to remain a dedicated fan as they go to the WNBA and the decades roll by? Well, the championship game was played on Sunday, and OJ was found guilty, which means Caitlin Clark lost. The ladies.
Hey ladies, it's anti-woke time. Get ready women for some anti-woke goodness.
Alright, be warned. In this next section, I'm going to joke about grape soda. Except, take off the soda at the end and the G at the front. So, skip over the next 20 minutes if that doesn't sound good to you. Does that ever work on anyone? The nightly news is always like, this next segment contains disturbing images. I think, you know, people who, you know, someone who's cooking in the kitchen, like, comes in to see them. It's like, a guy meets a girl, he's like, I'm warning you now, I'm a bad boy. And she's like, I like bad boys. And then a little bit later, why didn't he warn me? I thought bad boy means owns a motorcycle, not sleeps with my sister. Phoebe and Kat from the Feminine Chaos podcast are talking to Katie on her Blocked and Reported podcast, which is kind of like my podcast wet dream. And not because their bodies are sexy, their ideas are sexy. Well, actually, one of them is hot, Kat. It's just, you know, everything in life is a vicious cycle or a virtuous circle. So she is smoking hot. Her job is yoga instructor. Although she said when she got super fit, it made her breasts go away. So supposedly the new thing is breasts. We're moving away from butts. Just to the time that she's devoted her whole life and is getting paid to have a nice butt. But they're talking about the theory that now that Elon Musk has bought Twitter and all the blue tech journalists have run away or whatever, cancel culture ain't around anymore. And they mentioned that Christine Blasey Ford just came out with a book and no one cares. She's the lady who accused Brett Kavanaugh, the Supreme Court justice, of, I think, throwing her on a bed and then kind of jumping on top of her and bouncing on the bed a little bit before she ran out back in 1982 when they were in high school. And, you know, on the left, you're like, believe all women at the time. And then on the right, you're like, she's just making it up to try and stop this guy from getting on the Supreme Court. Well, joke's on someone because he's turned out to be almost a liberal justice. I think he's second most liberal out of the six conservatives. So that was a huge story. Now no one cares. I mean, maybe all they cared about was, you know, it was politics, trying to attack Republicans. It was just the attack Republicans of the week back then. And so maybe we don't care about Me Too, but we care about politics just as much. And, it, you know, the useful thing today is to attack Trump for something else. And then there's a podcaster, Huberman, and some mainstream media outlet did an expose of his love life. He cheats on his girlfriend, or well, all five of them. And I never heard of this guy. I looked at the Spotify top 10 podcast the other day. He's on there. He's maybe top five. I think he's kind of like the Manosphere, but more, you know, highfalutin. I don't know. I bet my listeners know. I don't know. So the New York Times or New York Mag or something wrote an expose of him cheating on his girlfriend. And the Blocked and Reported people were saying that the article read like one, you know, back in 2017 with Me Too, where they just would have, you know, they would have omitted certain details. They wouldn't have lied, right? But they would have lied by omission and maybe found a liar to put front and center or something to make it sound like he was a sexual predator, or, you know, sexual assault style. But you got to the end of the article and it was just like, this guy cheated on his girlfriend. And apparently he told his girlfriends, you know, up front. So the reaction was people were waiting for the other shoe to drop. It never dropped. And some writer for The Atlantic got accused of rape on Twitter. The Atlantic fired him, but he hasn't been fired from his Johns Hopkins University job yet. Might have been Reza Aslan. I'm not sure the name. But anyways, the Me Too thing. I mean, I think I've said this before. Right? You know, we moved on. What was the order? Right? It was Me Too helping women. It was Black Lives Matter helping blacks, helping them to an early grave. And it was transgender, blah, blah, and now it's Palestine. Although I think we're already starting to get past that one. Basically, these things are all fads, or the through line is fuck white men. And then the ladies are saying that, you know, Me Too, that's feeling sorry for white women, which is, that fell out of fashion, right? The very next thing after Me Too was Karens. That was the thing that kind of preceded the full-on Black Lives Matter, right? Racist Karens calling the police on innocent, didn't do nothing, black people. I mean, you know, you gotta pick your, you know, oppression Olympics hierarchy. Made me think. So, Me Too was white women saying they don't like being raped. You know who disproportionately rapes white women? George Floyd types. Which made me think, like, are the transers raping black men? And then the Palestinians are raping the transers? So it's like each group has to be dropped as a hot potato because the next group is raping them, and then that doesn't work. Well, and in fact, I don't know. If you leave out a few steps, the Palestinians are raping the white women. It's called October 7th. Ah, rape. Isn't it funny? Well, I mean, black people, no one's raping them. I mean, outside of their own group. I was going to say, the transers, they wish. But maybe that's taking it a little too far. And then Phoebe, one of the ladies, she wrote a book called, I think, The Last Straight Woman, talking about how young women identify as some sort of queer now. We don't have the exact numbers. I think something like 3 out of 4 white girls in high school say that they're some sort of queer. What I normally say is that all women are genetically bisexual, and then you add the internet and it confuses them, and this is what you get. Katie puts it a different way, though. She says she's talked to sexologists or something, and that a lot of them are thinking that sexual orientation just doesn't apply to women. It's a thing that applies to men, but not women. So, you know, that would be another way of saying it. Maybe they're not, because I think, you know, and that maybe that's right, because bisexual implies a certain thing. Well, that basically you do sleep with men and women. And, you know, tons of these high school girls are never going to have anything other than vanilla experiences their whole life, even though they say they're, you know, they're trying to get some stolen valor clout from saying they're LGBTQ2IA+. I mean, apparently we don't care about white women tears. Makes me wonder, October 7th, I wonder if any of those victims identified as some sort of queer, and then people might give a shit. And I guess NBC did some more polling on this, showing that young women identify as queer. And some important woman, is that an oxymoron? On Twitter, it was like, if you haven't actually slept with a woman, then I don't want to hear about your queerness. You know, let us all just move along. And then some other important woman wrote a book about how she tried a threesome with, how do you say that? FFM. Be careful of the MMFs. But anyways, she likes having wild sex. She figured she would try this. She did not enjoy it, but she did reach orgasm because of friction. And then Katie brings up, in prison, straight men, you know, might, whatever, reach the O from a BJ. Which reminded me of last week I was talking about California prisons. And it's been years since I watched the video, but I believe they did a video on that stuff. You know, maybe it was called Fish. But basically the YouTube prison influencers who tell their prison stories, all the ones I've seen talk about it say that it's up to you. You know, it's not someone else gets to make you gay and then you're gay and get ready for a lot of gay sex whether you like it or not. You know, it's up to you. You gotta want it. And I don't know if that's true, or it certainly could be copium. Like, if that happened to you, what do you say? Or I guess first off, you have to say, it doesn't happen to everyone. It's rare. If you're going to start putting yourself in the category of people it didn't happen to, You know, Johnny likes that stuff. I don't like it. I didn't do it. And in fact, I know a guy in real life who went to state prison, and I don't know, he was kind of gay for a few months afterwards. And he's like, whatever, never gay after that part where he was still gay for a little while, he was never gay again. I don't know on that. And I want to stop thinking about it. I will say, for the younger listeners, if you want your hair raised, go watch the movie American Me. And for you people who have seen that movie, remember that knife? That's probably the craziest thing I've ever seen in a movie. And now that I think about it, all the Mexican-American gangbangers in that movie, they wear blue. So I guess they were the Serenos, the Southsiders, the homies. And then they had the one white guy who was part of the gang, which I guess, well, that's outside of prison you can have that. They start talking about the science of it. And there's been studies where scientists hook electrodes up to women's genitals. I think it measures blood flow. And then they show them videos of stuff, and women respond to all sorts of things. You know, I think straight porn, lesbian porn, apparently a couple of monkeys. And I will say, you don't want to know what happens when they run those tests on men. But so I know about those studies, and that's, you know, maybe partly why I think what I think. But first off, I never heard the monkey part. It doesn't mean that women like monkeys. And sometimes I think I'm the only one who knows anything. Or maybe I think that all the time. It's like that scene from Spaceballs where the Darth Vader guy is on the bridge of the spaceship. And he's like, what's your name? Lieutenant Asshole, sir. What's your name? Sergeant Asshole, sir. He's like, I knew it. I'm surrounded by assholes. So I'm like, I knew it. I'm surrounded by women who don't know about this stuff. But apparently, some women are aware of this stuff. And so they go have, like, some lesbian sex and find out they don't like it. I'm just going to say what they say. Take it all with a grain of salt. Bisexual men are much more likely to actually have sex with a man versus bisexual women with women. That's all true. They think it's because apparently you can order a man on Grindr, like DoorDash. So that's their theory. I mean, my theory is you're gay. But what I think is possibly contradicted by most bisexual men and women end up in marriages of the opposite sex. And their theory is because there's just so many more straight people out there, just the odds, you know, I guess random, you know, instead of being 50-50, you know, if 90% of the people are straight, you're going to be 90% chance to end up with a straight person. And then, I don't know about that, you're gay. Not that there's anything wrong with it. And then apparently for bisexual women, 1% of them marry a woman or are in a monogamous relationship with a woman. 90% of them go monogamous with a man, and then I guess 9% other. But you know, if women are bisexual, you go, well, it should be half and half. But if you go, women have a whole different sexual orientation spectrum, you might say, well, yeah, they end up with a man, you know, I mean, you know, kids, babies, who knows? You're gay. And so bisexual women is the largest category of queer. It may add up to more than all the other ones put together. I mean, I think a lot of times it's just a checkbox. It's like, are you special? Check yes or no. Will you go out with me? Yes or no. But Katie, she's a real dyke. Can you say that? I feel like I can say queer, but I don't know about dyke. I'm an electrician, and one of your main tools is called diagonal cutters, and the brand name was Dyke. So you'll hear people like, get your dykes, grab your dykes, cut it with your dykes. I always thought it was like diagonal, diag, dyke, but actually, the guy's name, Mr. Dyke. I think from over 100 years ago, when that meant it was something you put your finger in to stop a flood. And maybe that's what it means today. But Katie says, in her circles, bisexual women were the lowest queer on the totem pole. They're the ones who got shit on. And the other ladies are like, well, what about a non-binary wife? And Katie's like, that's not even gay. We don't even count that shit. Well, this is going to be TMI, but you know, non-binary, to me, that makes me think of college girls with short haircuts. And I'm like, I like college girls with short haircuts. So I've gone on porn sites and done searches for non-binary, and that is not what you get back. I guess this is the 90%, 1% rule. You don't get the 90%, you get the 1%, and you don't want to know what that 1% is. And apparently the New York Times wrote an article about a queer husband and wife, and, you know, I think it had a picture of a husband and a wife, and you had to read the whole article to get to the punchline at the end, but he would have a hamburger for dinner, and she would have a salad, and that was queering. And someone said recently that bisexual, that just means Democrat. And Katie said that. She said that years ago. I mentioned it in this podcast. She said non-binary means Democrat. I'd almost say non-binary means believes a bunch of shit that ain't true about the world. And then Phoebe says, you can't be an ally anymore. So now that's why white women gotta be bisexual or something. So let's run through the LGBTQ2IA+. So lesbian, gay, bisexual, transsexual, queer, two feathers, intersex, ally, and plus means get ready for more. So A is ally. That was for like straight people who, I guess, vote Democrat. Anyways, they're scraping them off. You got to get another letter. You got to move closer to the front. I mean, LGB, that's third. That's kind of the catbird seat. And I don't know, like, that's the one I remember because I heard that in like 2018 and I was like, what? And I never forgot it. I thought it was so crazy. Even though I was about to vote for Biden 2 years later. But so the ones you may not heard of, two feathers, some white man made up a special one for Native American transers. And I think there's a racial one for all of them now that I'm not aware of. Huh, B got in for bisexual before it could get in for black. And then I for intersex, like that's if you're actually born with something. XXY, I think is one of them. And the rest you know. Well, and then non-binary, shortened to NB, they don't get one. And L and B, lesbian and bisexual, it looks like those may not be real things either. We need an all-knowing AI oracle to come in and tell us the real letters. You gay.
I am not gay. I have relationships with women and sex with men.
And I got news for you. That means you're gay.
First, you drink a sex on the beach. Then you have sex on the beach. Now you're pregnant and you may need an abortion on the beach. So, the Florida Supreme Court just allowed a 12-week ban in Florida. And Florida has a law that says if the 12-week ban ever goes into effect, then a 6-week ban also goes into effect a month later. Meanwhile, abortion rights advocates have been trying to get a ballot measure up in Florida to make abortion legal just in general. Probably advocates from out of state. And the Florida Supreme Court ruled that that can go on the ballot. So basically, they said, you can make abortion illegal if you want, and you can make abortion legal if you want. This is the new states' rights. And I want to say 13 states have ballot initiatives to make abortion great again. I mean, legal again. And this is a Democrat thing. In 2022, they put abortion ballot initiatives on the ballot in a number of states, and then that really juiced the turnout for, I don't know, young women or something, which then coattails rode in some Democrats. So they're trying that again. I mean, why wouldn't you? Plus, they love abortion. Bet you can't eat just one. Although people don't think it's going to work as good in 2024 because turnout, like, everyone's voting regardless this time around, so there's no one on the sideline that you can bring out. It's kind of like how it affects the elections is all that matters, because since the Trump Supreme Court overturned Roe versus Wade, the number of abortions is up. I wonder if it's like when Obama got elected, everyone ran out and bought a gun because they're like, he's going to make guns illegal. So quick, get an abortion. And so far, even the reddest states, if you put it directly to the voters, make abortion legal, they're like, yes. I mean, imagine a state that's 51% Republican. Well, then the politicians are going to be Republican, and they're going to try and outlaw abortion. But if you put it to the people, now you got 49% Democrat. They're all going to vote to make it legal. And it depends, but almost up to half of Republicans nowadays are starting to be pro-choice. Certainly 1 in 3 Republicans. And the Florida ballot initiatives, they require 60% to put something into the, I guess, the state constitution. So we shall see. And it made me look up maps of the U.S., where you have ballot initiatives and where you have illegal abortion. And basically, the South is the place where abortion is not legal and there ain't no ballot initiatives, except for Florida. So it looks like if you're in the South and you need an abortion, well, you go to Florida. If it passes, and, you know, it's a nice place to visit. You can go to the beach while you're there. And 60% of abortions are now done with the magic pill, mifepristone. And it looks like the Supreme Court is going to keep that legal. And you need a prescription, and you're supposed to only take it within the first 10 weeks of pregnancy. But I think there's doctors in California who will do your appointment over the phone and send it to you in the mail, so... You know, that covers the South. You probably don't even have to go to Florida. In 10 weeks, you know, I did 90 seconds of Googling. Can you do it after 10 weeks? The answer is yes. So you may have to tell the doctor a little story, or hell, just make the call now. Just save the pill for later if you need it. It seems like right now, America just really doesn't like Christians. And that is not a good thing. After you're done discriminating against some whites, go discriminate against some Christians. And 538 Podcast is talking about this. They said that behind closed doors, Trump has been talking to people about a possible 15-week ban. But the 538 people, they don't think that's going to work. I mean, 15 weeks may be popular with Americans, although, you know, it's going to be more popular with maybe Democrats. It's not all Republicans are going to love it. Obviously, but they're like, you know, on the border, they don't trust Democrats. On abortion, they don't trust Republicans. So a supposedly reasonable proposal of 15 weeks, probably not going to sway many voters. And I tried to look up some polling stats on this. It's not easy. It was about 50-50 on Republicans thinking that mifepristone should be legal versus illegal. But maybe, I don't know, I saw 1/3, I saw a half, and I saw 2/3 for kind of all these questions for Republicans. Like, you word it some ways, it's like, oh, half of Republicans think are pro-choice. But sometimes you're like, no, 2/3 of Republicans want to ban it all. Except for the life of the mother thing, which, yeah, really divides them. I think 7% don't care about, they don't want to hear no excuses. 7% Republicans, no excuses. I mean, all this stuff favors Democrats. I mean, the media can be like, every day leading up to the election, they can be like, Florida outlawed abortion. You got to vote for the Democrats. And then the day after the election, abortion's going to be legal as hell in Florida. So they get it both ways. Crime and punishment. Well, mostly just crime.
Raise and cry on the Anti-Vote Podcast.
There wasn't any interesting crime this week, but I did want to play that AI song that I made for my crime sections. So this is the end of the crime segment. Well, that's the end of the episode. Links in the description, and thanks for listening.